This is 4:55 on Monday, September 19th. Okay, good morning. So we're going to start this morning with some quick review of the big Andy and little Andean ideas and making sure that you understand that. Yes? The recording is going. Thank you. I apologize on Friday that didn't happen. I have found the recordings from last year and they roughly correspond to what we covered, so I'll post those for Friday, but realize they won't be exactly the same as what we talked about. Okay, so let's see with the first question. And let me explain about the format here before you get too far into this. So I don't know if people are used to looking at these dump formats anymore, but certainly you should have encountered them when working with the MIP simulator in 260, I think. The idea is that we have an address followed by a colon, and then the sequence of bytes that appear beginning at that address. So this byte is at hex address 1000. 1001, 1002, 1003, 4, 6, 8, A, C, E, right? Those are those addresses. And in these questions, what I'm asking you to do is look at something that's stored at a particular address in this line, in this case, 1008. So 1008 is there. Okay? So at 1008 we have FF, at 109 FF. That's what this means. And now the question is, look at this address. What is the numerical value of the two byte integer starting at that address? Write your answer as an expression involving sums of powers of 256. Why 256? Because each byte is worth 256. You know, a byte is a 256 value digit in some ways. Or if you want, write it as a powers of 16, right? Because each of these hex digits is a digit that has 16, all right? But what I'm really getting at is making sure that you understand big and little Indian. But in order to understand that, you also have to understand this other language. Okay? So that's the question. We did one of these in class, so. I think we did one of these in class on Friday. I'm seeing a lot of blank stares and no answers. You want me to do the first one for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, it's a little Endian machine, right? So, what does that mean? That means that the first byte is the low order digit, essentially, of the number, and the second byte is the high order digits. Okay? So I would write this as zero x FF plus 0x FE times 256. Yeah? Is this a I'm seeing so many puzzled looks. This is 260. I think.
I don't remember this one. 260.
You talked about little Indian.
You overestimated our 260
curriculum. Okay. All right. Well, this is important stuff. You know, what does a number look like in the memory of the computer? Right? It's some bytes. And somehow you have to take those bytes and turn them into a number, you know, an abstract number. And this is the way we do it. Okay? And what's funny here is that this is a little endian representation, which means that the first byte is the low order piece, the times, this is, you know, times 256 to the zero power, plus something times 256 to the one power. Let me write it as powers of 16. Now, what's very weird is that the little endianness does not extend within the bytes. Okay, it's only with respect to the bytes. So, which is why I ask you to do it in powers of 256 instead of otherwise. So the first one, the two digits are the same. So we have 0xf times 256 to the 0, and 0xf times 256 to the 1 power, plus, all right, now, which of these is the higher order one? It's this one. So 0xf times 256 squared. Plus, oops, there's too many f's there. Plus 0xe. Wait a second. No, other way around. 0xe times 256 squared plus 0xf times 256. And I'm writing 256 when I should be writing 16. Stop me, guys.
Oh, so it is 16. Okay.
It's 16. I said I was going to do 16, and then I started doing something else. Yeah, that would be pretty confusing. Is there times 16 cubed, right? With me? All right.
Did you miss the plus after the 16 to the power of 0?
Oh, probably. Yes. Let's fix that. Sorry that I can't make this bigger, but... All right. Question?
Was there a reason for the 256? Was there a different way or something like that?
No, I was... 256, I was grouping the two hex digits together,
okay.
Right? So, within a byte, with bytes, they're powers of 256. With hex digits, they're powers of 16.
Oh.
The square root of 256.
Okay.
Okay? Shall we do another one? Yes. Let's do another one. All right. So now we're talking about a big endian machine, and rather than ask, we'll do the question, and then we'll ask some other things about this example. So on a big endian architecture machine, the 2-byte signed integer value with address x1008. Well, where does that start, first of all? Where is that? What? That's the FE01, right? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right? FE01, is that a positive 2-byte signed integer or a negative 2-byte signed integer? Let's just talk. Forget class. Let's just talk. Positive or negative? What do you think?
Negative.
Why?
Because the first bit would be 1.
Because the first bit is the high order bit of this F is 1, right? And that's the high order byte, and so that's the high order bit of the high order byte, and therefore it's negative. Yes?
So if it's anything other than 0, you can assume it's
anything bigger, if that digit is anything bigger than or equal to 8, it will be negative. All right?
Why
8?
Obviously,
right? Be a little familiar with your hex digits. Once it's 8, then the high order bit is turned on, and that makes it negative in the case that we're thinking of it as a signed integer. What if we're thinking of this? Let's ask, what if we're thinking of this as an unsigned integer? What is the value as powers of 256?
I'll get a notebook, a notepad here. So we're thinking about 0xFE01 was, I think, right?
Let's write it as powers of 256 as a big endian number. Okay? It's
0x01 times 256 to the 0 plus 0xFE times 256 to the 1
as a big endian number. I see a frown. Why a frown? Okay, well, we could do it as 6. The reason I wanted to do 256 is for little endian it gets confusing because within the bytes they're in a different order than they are when you're doing the bytes themselves. So it's easier, I think, if you do 256. Anyway, let's do it as powers of 16. 0x01 times 16 to the 0 plus 0 times 16 to the 1 plus e times 0xe times 16 squared plus 0xf times 16 cubed.
The first should be 0x1, right?
The first?
Huh? 16 times 16 to the 0, not 0, 1.
Oh, just, well, just 1 or 0,
oh,
1.
It's
the same either way. The value is 1.
If we're just breaking it up.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I could even get rid of all of that.
And then if you want to be familiar with your hex digits, what is this one? This is 14. This is 15. So if you wanted to write it in decimal, that would be okay too. I wouldn't mind. Yes?
I guess I'm just a bit confused why you can treat the F and the E as the same number when you're writing it base 256.
I'm not treating it as the same number. I'm saying that as a hex value has a certain value. The byte FE has a certain value. Multiply that value times 256. What is this value?
Okay. It's just like, because the E would start. Why wouldn't it be the power of 2, I guess?
The power of 2?
For the FE, if that makes any sense. It's like.
Look. There are two. Think of them as digits, right?
Same way you've been doing since second grade.
Right? If I write 37,
that's 3 times 10 plus 7 times 1. Right?
Been doing that since second grade, I think. Okay? Well, the powers that you use for this are the base of the number, right? And this is a base 10 number. This is a base 256 number. Because this is a digit and this is a digit. And these digits range from 0 to 255. So, FE, What is FE? Well, what is FF? What's the decimal value of FF? 255. So FE is
254. So if you wanted to write that in decimal, you could write it that way too.
Okay?
I think so.
You're going to get some practice with this in the assignment, I fear.
Hopefully not in the exam once you have a calculator.
What?
Hopefully not in the exam once you have a calculator.
Look, I have done no calculations here. At all.
So you're not going to ask us for like the actual value?
I would not ask you for the actual value. I would ask you a question like this. Write it as powers of 256. Write it as powers as a sum of powers of 200 of 16. Right? I wouldn't ask you. I should be able to ask you. But I won't. Right? So now, let's go back to here. And how about let's look at this number, 2 bytes, four bytes. Let's look at this number as a big endian number. Positive or negative? Positive. The high order bit is clearly. So as a 4-byte number, that's a positive number. A 4-byte big endian number is a positive number. How about as a 4-byte little endian number? That would be negative, because now the higher order byte is that one, and the higher order bit of the higher order byte is 1. Okay? So how about let's do this as a little endian unsigned number, and write it as powers of 256. Okay, so we're writing, see if I can remember it long enough. 010201FE. 01021FE. As a little endian, 4-byte, unsigned number. Okay? So it's 01, or just 1, times 256 to the 0, plus 02, times 256 to the 1, plus 01, times 256 squared, plus FE, times 256 cubed. Yes? All right. Last question. Maybe I've already answered it. I don't know. By now. I think maybe I did. Well, okay, the only remaining thing here, I think we've talked about everything, is identifying which numbers we're talking about having address 100C. What is the number at 100C? What are the bytes at 100C? Which ones? Where does it start? It's this number we've been working at. 010201. How do you know? Well, this is 1000, 1002, 1004, 1006, 1008, 100A, 10. Okay. Just count them, but count in hex.
You're shaking your head, Michael.
Oh, it's a little bit of a
what?
Don't go to the top page, I guess.
Don't Don't look at
the answers are pretty split.
Oh, yeah, well. People are still confused. I did this one. We did. We just answered this question.
There's 100C, right? The high order byte as a little endian number is that one, the FE. And the high order bit of that byte is 1. And so it would be treated as a signed negative number. Yes?
How is E1?
What?
You're saying the higher byte.
The high order bit, we're looking at a byte whose value is FE.
The bit, okay, yeah.
The high order bit of the high order byte is 1.
That's what determines positive or negative. All right, let us look at the assignment, the programming assignment. Let's look at the calendar first. Because, I want to point out where we are. We are starting week 5, the 19th of September.
We're going to talk about the assignment today. Then we're going to talk about the transport layer for the next the rest of this week and next week. And then notice what's happening at the end of next week. The first exam. Okay? This stuff about big and little endian will be on the exam, of course. And the socket system calls, and all the stuff we've been practicing. Let's talk about the project. Where did we go? So I really don't like this way of... All right, well, this is a brand new version of this project. I've been assigning variations on this for many years, and this is a large variation compared to any one that I've sent before. So it's likely that we will find things that need adjusting as we go. But let's just have a continuing dialogue about that as you work on it. I think it's okay, you know, it's the best of my knowledge right now, it's okay, but as I work through it and you work with it, we may find things that are confusing or ambiguous or even wrong, so don't be shy about saying, I think that's, there's something wrong there, okay? So we'll start with that. So you have until early October, about a week into October to do this, and...
the day, exact date on the calendar. I got tired. So there's a principle in databases called data normalization, which says that you put any particular piece of data in only one place and refer to it from other places, rather than making copies of it all over the place so that if anything changes, you have to go to all those places and change it. Well, this is an experiment in data normalization for assignments. The assignment doesn't actually contain the due date. Just references the calendar with the due date, you know. Okay. So, as I said last time, this is going to be programming in C. This is the only assignment that I require you to do in C. This is for my sanity as much as yours. As I've been working through this assignment, I've been reminded once again why it's important to do it in C and also why I'd rather not program in C if I didn't have to. It must be C, not C++, C#, Python, Java, anything else. There's
a client and a server, and they each take a command line argument.
Hopefully everybody knows what I mean by a command line argument. Insert page. So the client, right, we're sitting at a command. You start client by saying client
or some variation thereof, and then an address and a port.
Okay. And you start the server by saying just port. Right? Because the server is going to know its own address, or it's going to not care about its own address. But the client has to know the address. Now, do we need to run the client and server on different machines? No. That's not, in fact, default to doing it on different machines. So that means that you can use this magic number called localhost as the address of your server when you're talking, when you're setting up the client to run, you just say, it's running on this machine right here. Okay? That 127.0.0.1 is a magic number that says that. Okay? Port number will typically need to be something bigger than 1024. Well, bigger than 1023, the so-called non-privileged ports. One of the things I ask you to do is try it on a privileged port and see what happens. But, and then this must be these two things must be the same, obviously. Okay, so those are just how the client and server are invoked. Okay, you need to start the first server first, because if you don't, when you start the client is going to fail saying, I couldn't contact the server. So we're not going to try to deal with making the client wait for the server to show up. It's a straightforward thing to do, but just more work at this stage. And then the server is going to let multiple clients connect to it over time, but not all at once. So this will be a server that handles one client at a time, but once one client is done, it can go on to the next one. Okay. We'll get to the way this works, but essentially what's happening is that the client is sending commands and arguments to the server is doing something with them and sending them back, and we'll talk about what that is in a second. Hello. Okay, what to turn in? I want you to turn in a zip file named as indicated containing exactly the following files. Right? So typically I get zip files that have Microsoft project stuff in them or Eclipse project stuff and Mac OS special directories. I don't want any of that crud. Right? I just want the files that I sent you. Okay, so you're going to turn in the header file, which is down below, and we'll get to that. Your client code, your server code. You can write more C and H files if needed, if that would make things organized better. I'll scroll that up so you can see. Something that will compile your client and server codes and name them appropriately. So I don't want you to turn in the executables, but I want you to turn in a file that will tell me how to make the executables using a C file. And a readme.txt file that is just a plain text file. I don't want any fancy stuff, just a plain text file. And it needs to answer or discuss the following things. What happens if you try to start the server on low number, specifically port 5? Just tell me what happens. Okay? And why that happens. Okay. The server is going to make a log file of everything the client sends it. Okay? Tell me how long it is. So I don't care, I don't want the log file, I just want to know how long it is. You should be able to figure out how long it should be,
The reason for this is you figure out should be and check to make sure that that answer is right. Okay? You can look at the specifications later and see how long it should be. Okay. The result of running this command, SHA-256-SUM, on that same file. Okay, that will be a great big long hex number, and just tell me what it is. Because the assignment is deterministic, if you've done everything right on the client and client side as far as sending the requests correctly, and on the server side in the form of recording the request correctly, everybody should end up with the same value of that number. Okay? I do not know yet what it is because I have not finished the assignment myself. But I will know what it should be. And I will share it with you once I know what it is. Okay? And then you will have some confidence that your program is doing the right thing, at least up to a certain point. So this is typically available on Linux-y machines, and I expect Maxes and Macs, and if you look it up, you can find a Windows EXE too. Okay, we'll get to this one later, and then tell me how many hours you spent on the project. Now, you may work on this project either individually or in teams of two. If you work in a team, people should track their hours separately. I would suggest that the way you break up the work, working in a team, is have one person work on some of the client code and somebody else work on the corresponding piece of the server code and then swap back and forth. Right? There are enough pieces here that you can do that, and they're separated enough that you can do that. And I think you'll learn a lot by talking to somebody. So if you can bring yourself to work with somebody, I think it would be a good thing.
Some people just can't, but yes.
Is that to evaluate like how hard people thought the assignment was?
Partly.
The hours we took?
Partly. It's not part of your grade.
Okay.
And the other thing is, I would say, if this number in total gets sort of into the 25-hour range for a team, okay, if it's starting to get up there and you're not really making progress, then that's an indicator of trouble, okay? And you need to be seeing me or the TA for some help, right? If it even looks like it's going to get to that point, you should be looking. So that's partly the reason I want you to track the hours, is as an indicator for yourself of how you're doing here. Okay? All right. A few notes. So you'll recall that the little textbook has a client, echo client and server code that I said you could download and try out. That would be a good starting point for some of the things you need to do here. I don't want to see code. I don't want to see names in your code that sort of suggest that your code is that code, right? Rename it. Rename things with names appropriate for this assignment. If you do copy it, just acknowledge that you did so in your... I mean, if you start with it, acknowledge you did so in your comments. That's always a good thing. Okay. We talked about, when we talked about the system calls, that you need to check the return codes, return values of all system calls, print an appropriate message, and exit if an error occurs. The Donahue and Calvert has a die with error thingy that it uses when those unrecoverable errors occur. You can use that. Remember that send and especially receive do not necessarily send and receive as much data as was requested to be sent. I will allow you to ignore that possibility for sends, but for receives you must deal with it, because if you don't deal with it, your program may well not work correctly. Okay. So you must deal with that fact for receives. Do not do 1 or 2 byte sends and receives.
The way this thing is set up, you're going to have a request that's got multiple bytes in it. You know the whole request. Send the whole dang request at once. Okay? On the other side, on the receive, say, I'll take as much data as you want to send me up to a certain, up to the size of the buffer that I've provided. If you make those buffers 256 bytes, for the most part, that will be sufficient. I'll take that much, and then I'll figure out what to do with what I actually got. So, 1 and 2 byte write. There is one part of the assignment that explicitly asks you to do 1 byte sends and receives, and of course this one. You don't have to code defensively against other people attacking your server. That is, you may assume that the client and server both obey the protocol, but you need to program defensively against your own mistakes. This was one of the things that I learned yesterday as I was doing this, as I was writing my code for this, was that I made a lot of mistakes. And there were things that I had done by assuming that I wouldn't, that I wished that I hadn't assumed that, because it made things behave bizarrely. Like, for example, one thing to realize is that if you ever call receive and it returns 0 bytes read, that means that the other guy has closed the stream. You can never call receive again and get anything useful out of it. And if you keep calling receive, all you're going to get is 0 bytes every time. And of course, I had programs that would go off into la-la land while they were attempting to read and making no progress because all I was getting was 0 bytes. So if you check that, you'll sort of protect yourself against some certain nastinesses, at least. Okay, if you are not already familiar with the strace command, is anybody familiar with the strace command? Only one. Okay, well, make its acquaintance. That means look it up in the manual pages or online. It's a way to run a program, and strace will print out all of the system calls that that program makes. So you can see the sends and the receives, the writes into the log file. Do they look like what you expect? Okay. Very handy debugging tool. It often saves putting in debugging statements into your program, or sort of tedious investigation with an interactive debugger, which requires you to sort of step and look individually at everything. This thing will just spew them out. And you can look at history and see if anything looks odd. So that's a good one. Another function that is often useful is perror, which will, after an error occurs, tell you a little bit about what the error was. So if your system call, remember, returns a negative number, it means there was an error, but it doesn't tell you what the error was. Perror will interpret the error no value to tell you in English what it was. Okay? So that's something to be aware of. This is C. So if you screw up your system calls or your mem copies or your stir copies and tell it to do more, to write more into a buffer than will fit, it will happily do that, overriding other variables in your program and making us all very unhappy. So make sure that buffers are big enough for values that may be stored in them, and also make sure that your function calls will not overwrite the buffers that you have. Right? Both of those things. Pay attention to that. Another handy thing is, I think this is already in the Echo server client code, there's a function that will convert the 127.0.0.1 into an appropriate 4-byte integer for stuffing into the things that you need for bind and connect. That's good.
little technical thing here. If you kill your server and restart it, it may well fail in the bind stage. A socket remains a little bit busy and occupied for a few seconds after a server that was listening on it quits. And so what I did was I just picked a different port number and restarted the server using that. Okay, and finally, I said this is entered as a bunch of commands that the client sends to the server. I strongly, I can't say it enough times, I guess I have to stop, recommend that you implement one of those commands on the client side and one on the server side and get it fully working absolutely correctly before you start the next one. And then do the next one. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of code in front of you that you're not really going to understand its structure very well, and you're going to be so lost in it. So just do them one at a time. They're completely separable in that way, and you will make so much better progress and feel so much better about yourself and know what progress you're making. Right? I said, don't let the time get out of hand. If you can implement one of these, you're well on the way to implementing all of them. But if you try all of them, I think you're going to be intimidated. Okay. So this project1.h file defines what the project is all about. There are a bunch of commands, and they're just small integer values that both govern the behavior of the client and constitute the protocol for interacting with the server. And so what this means is that, okay, so here's this array governs the behavior of the client. It says, march through this array and do a null terminated command, then do a given length command, then do a bad int command, then do a good int command, and do a byte at a time command, a k byte at a time command. I could repeat these, right? I could do multiple instances of these commands. This is a list of things that the client is supposed to do. Yes?
Is there a reason why you wrap a number in a parentheses?
Yes, there is. This is always a good practice when doing defines like this to ensure that things don't get pasted together in ways that are surprising.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just a sort of habit that one gets into. Okay. So this array is the specific test case that I want you to do, and the commands are sort of general. They're to be implemented in such a way to do them over and over again. So what do the commands mean? So when I have a null terminated command, I'm going to send the command by itself, one, and then I'm going to send the string with its null termination to the server. Those things get sent to the server, and the server does something with them and replies. We'll tell you about that in a second. Another way to send a string that we talked about is send the length first. Right? So the given length command sends the command, which is 2 as a single byte, and then it sends a 2-byte length for the string, and then it sends the string itself without the terminator. And the server figures out how much of the string to read now from the length that was sent. Bad int is sending a 4-byte number without using H2NL on it. That's the wrong way to do it. You should get the wrong number when it comes back, because you forgot. Good int is the way of doing it properly. This one sends data 1-byte with sends and receives of 1-byte each. And this one, more reasonable, it sends a kilobyte. Same data, but
and that is all.
Oh, and then
for use of the server, one of the things that the server does is it translates those single byte values into character strings, and this array will let you do that lookup just by indexing into this array to get the name of a command from its number. Okay, so then comes the client behavior. There's the no more commands command that says we've reached, we've reached the end of the array. Don't go any farther. And this one actually doesn't even interact with the server. It just tells the client to close its connection to the server. The server will notice that and itself end what it's doing. Okay. And then descriptions of what I just said.
So when I say, you know, implement these one at a time,
implement null terminated command on the client side. Implement it on the server side. Get it all working. And then go on. Given like that, I described all of those before. What happens after you've sent that stuff? You get back a response from the server that's just a character. It's just a character string with a length in front of it that you print out on. Server behavior. So if suppose I send a good int, send it a good int command with the value 37 to the server, then I should get back 2 bytes that say how long the string is, 11 bytes, and then the bytes good int colon 37. That's what should come back from the server. Okay, and then the other thing is that the server does is it writes everything that it receives. Every byte that it receives gets written into the log file. You can do that. Whatever file name you want to give that, wherever's convenient, you can write that. You just have to be able to find that file afterwards so you can run. You can see how long it is and see and compute its SHA-256 sum. Right? So you have to know where the file is in order to do those things, but apart from that, I don't care where you put it. All right, so that header file, you can just copy the text out of this PDF file to make that header file. I'm going to go back to the office and try that. If it doesn't work, I will make the file available separately for download. One suggestion is you've all implemented, say, the null terminated command. Comment out these instructions, the remaining instructions, except for no more commands, and then your client will do that. Just do that one and not do all the rest of them. Go. All right, Michael.
What compiler are you going to be using, or do you want us to use?
So for Linuxy machines, you should probably just use GCC.
Okay.
For Windows machines, you should use the Microsoft compiler, but use it in command line fashion.
And or what machine are you going to be testing?
So the primary thing that we're going to do is read the code. Okay. If you do it on Windows, we will remember I said give us a batch file or a shell file to compile it. So that will tell us what we need to do. But don't assume that we have exotic compilers. So the Microsoft C compiler, GCC, those are safe choices. Okay? Other questions?
Go off, study it, come back on Wednesday, bring any questions you have at this stage, and continue to bring questions as we work through it.
Just one clarification.
One second.